Hello and welcome to the Verity Podcast for Thursday, April 4th, 2024. We're the only podcast that keeps on separating the fact from the narrative spin. I'm Adam Clark.
And I'm Eric Steiner. Let's look at today's headlines. President Biden and Xi hold their first talks since January.
At least 9 are killed after a powerful earthquake rocks Taiwan.
Ukraine lowers its conscription age to 25.
President Joe Biden expresses outrage over the Israeli airstrike that killed Gaza aid workers.
Donald Trump sues Truth Social's co-founders.
Jack Smith criticizes a judge's order on the Trump classified documents case.
J.K. Rowling won't face criminal action under Scotland's hate crime law.
Tesla's production reportedly decreased in the first quarter of this year.
Botswana threatens to ship 20,000 elephants to Germany.
And Tennessee passes a law banning geoengineering.
Topping today's news, Biden and Xi hold their first conversation in months. Here are the facts as agreed upon by BBC News, China Daily, New York Times, Bloomberg, South China Morning Post, and Associated Press. U.S. President Joe Biden and his Chinese counterpart Xi Jinping held on Tuesday a nearly two-hour candid and constructive phone conversation in which contentious and cooperative issues were addressed. This was the first time that the two leaders spoke with each other since they exchanged congratulations on the 45th anniversary of diplomatic ties between Beijing and Washington on January 1st. Biden and Xi expressed concerns to each other about trade policies in Taiwan, according to official readouts, with talks focusing on the South China Sea and ongoing conflicts in the world. However, the two leaders have reportedly sought consensus on artificial intelligence, climate change, and military communications, as well as the fight against drug trafficking. As part of their agreement, Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin is expected to speak with his new Chinese counterpart, Dong Jun, for the first time in the coming weeks. Other high-level U.S.-China exchanges are on the horizon, as Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen is scheduled to travel to China on Thursday with Secretary of State Antony Blinken to follow in the near future.
Thank you, Eric, for the facts on our first story today. I'm going to start the first round of narrative spins with a Democratic narrative, and it's provided by Semaphore. President Biden made good use of his conversation with Xi, as he raised several concerns over worrying international developments and defending the U.S. His administration is currently doing all it can to ensure peaceful and stable relations with Beijing and even push for limited cooperation as competition between the two powers increases.
Follow that with a Republican narrative coming from New York Post. Another interaction with Xi, another show of weakness. Joe Biden has essentially done the same thing over and over again during his tenure, raising concerns to Beijing over a plethora of issues, but not taking any step, either words or actions, to force China to halt its provocations.
Spin's going to continue with a pro-China narrative provided by Global Times. While this phone call is certainly a reassurance that tensions remain managed, the U.S. continues to say one thing while doing another. There is handsome potential for both nations to thrive in the same global order, but this will only occur if America focuses on actions rather than words and respects its commitments to measures such as the One China policy.
Metaculous Prediction Community has a nerd narrative. It says there's a 10% chance of a U.S.-China war before 2035.
At least 9 have been killed after a powerful earthquake shakes Taiwan. Here are the facts as agreed upon by Washington Post, Al Jazeera, Associated Press, The National, Reuters, and BBC News. A 7.4 magnitude earthquake struck the east coast of Taiwan on Wednesday, killing 9 people and injuring more than 900. This is the strongest quake to hit the island in 25 years. According to the United States Geological Survey, the quake struck southwest of Hualien City at 7:58 a.m. local time, with Taiwan recording at least 58 aftershocks. The earthquake and aftershocks partially collapsed buildings, damaged roads and bridges, caused landslides, and triggered tsunami warnings. The number of missing has remained in flux as authorities conducted rescues. While rescue efforts have been underway, over 87,000 households in Taiwan are without power, and at least 77 people are still trapped in the rubble. Several small tsunami waves reportedly reached parts of Japan's Okinawa Prefecture, while coastal residents in several Philippines provinces were asked to move to higher ground. Taiwan, which experiences regular seismic activity, was hit by a 7.6 magnitude earthquake in September of 1999, which killed 2,400 people.
Thanks, Adam. The first spin is Narrative A, coming from New York Times. Since Taiwan lies on a tectonic boundary between the Eurasian plate and the Philippine sea plate, the island is regularly jolted by earthquakes. However, the fact that Wednesday's powerful quake was felt in Shanghai, nearly 900 kilometers or 590 miles away, yet caused no significant damage or casualty, shows that Taiwan's natural disaster response is world class.
I've got a Narrative B spin, and it's provided by Bloomberg. Taiwan may have a world-class seismological network, but its early warning system is still ancient, or Wednesday's massive earthquake wouldn't have taken aback the island. The quake will have a significant economic impact, particularly on Taiwan's semiconductor manufacturing sector, which provides 90% of the world's most advanced microchips.
The nerds from Metaculus are saying there's a 50% chance that at least 74,800 people will die as a result of the most deadly earthquake from 2020 to 2029. Ukraine lowers conscription age to 25. The facts are agreed upon by Associated Press, Wall Street Journal, TASS, Guardian, and Washington Post. In an effort to replace depleted troops, President Volodymyr Zelensky on Tuesday signed a law to lower the military conscription age from 27 to 25. The new law took effect Wednesday. While all men aged 18 to 60 have been barred from leaving the country since the war began, only those 27 and older could be drafted by the government to fight. The parliament originally approved the conscription age change in June of 2023, but Zelensky held off on signing it until this week. Hundreds of thousands of Ukrainians volunteered to fight at the beginning of the war, and most of those who wanted to fight had already signed up. Many of those soldiers are now dead, wounded, or exhausted. Zelensky's former top commander, General Valery Zaluzhny, had called for 500,000 new troops, though Zelensky said they don't have the funds to pay so many. Zaluzhny's successor, Colonel General Oleksandr Sirsky, said the amount needed was significantly reduced. This comes as the U.S. Congress is still stalled on approving a new aid package for Ukraine, and Russia is expected to conduct a large counteroffensive this summer.
Eric, we're going to start the spins again. I've got Semaphore speaking up for the pro-Ukraine narrative. Ukraine is facing several issues surrounding manpower, among which is certainly a need for new conscripts. The government could also work to rotate its frontline troops, most of whom have not had a break in 2 years, to the back and replace them with the hundreds of thousands of others who have yet to face the front line.
RT International has a pro-Russian narrative. Zelensky is about to pull an even younger generation of Ukrainians onto the battlefield despite his past efforts failing to defeat Russian forces. As he lowers the conscription age, he's citing the lie that Russia intends to mobilize another 300,000 soldiers by June as a reason to rebuild his forces. Ukraine couldn't win with its original force and will continue to lose after this latest move.
The nerds are going to wrap up this spin. They think that there's a 50% chance that there will be a bilateral ceasefire or peace agreement in the Russo-Ukraine conflict by April of 2026. And that's according to the Metaculus prediction community. Recent news out of Gaza, where President Biden is outraged at an Israeli airstrike that killed aid workers. Here are the facts as agreed upon by NBC, the White House, Bournemouth Echo, the Maritime Executive, Daily Mail, Gov.uk, and X. In the aftermath of Israeli airstrikes on a convoy of aid workers that killed at least 7 people in Gaza, including a U.S.-Canada dual citizen and citizens of Australia, Poland, and the U.K., U.S. President Joe Biden said Tuesday that he was, quote, outraged and heartbroken by the attack, before proceeding to issue some of his harshest warnings for Israel yet. Biden said, quote, "This conflict has been one of the worst in recent memory in terms of how many aid workers have been killed." He continued, "Incidents like yesterday's simply should not happen." Meanwhile, it emerged on Tuesday that the 3 British citizens killed were all ex-military and had been part of the convoy of World Central Kitchen Trucks, or WCK, as part of its security detail. they worked for the UK security firm Solus Global, located in Poole in the south of England. Filled with former military and intelligence officials from the UK, Solus Global is one of the country's biggest security contractors, maintaining close ties to Britain's armed forces, the Royal Navy, and various intelligence agencies. Among them is the UK's National Cybersecurity Centre. On Wednesday, British Prime Minister Rishi Sunak sidestepped increasing calls for the UK to halt arms exports to Israel. However, in response to a question about a call with Israeli counterpart Benjamin Netanyahu, Sunak said, quote, "What's happened is a tragedy and it shouldn't have happened, and there are questions that need answering." According to a Downing Street readout of the call a day earlier, Sunak told Netanyahu that he was appalled by the killing of aid workers, including three British nationals, in an airstrike in Gaza, and demanded a thorough and transparent independent investigation into what happened. Meanwhile, in the early hours of Wednesday, the Chief of Staff of Israel's Defense Forces, Herzi Halevi, issued an apology for the deadly Israeli airstrikes. He said, "I want to be very clear. The strike was not carried out with the intention of harming WCK aid workers." He continued, "It was a mistake that followed a misidentification at night during a war in very complex conditions. It shouldn't have happened."
Thanks, Adam. The round of spins will begin with a pro-establishment narrative coming from NBC. This was an appalling incident, and the strike on an aid convoy was only one in a string of incidents that has made this conflict the deadliest on record for aid workers. The U.S. has consistently said that while it stands by Israel, it must do more to protect civilians from harm and ensure the safe passage of humanitarian aid.
That's going to be countered with the establishment critical narrative, and it's provided by Canary. This was another appalling Israeli attack on civilians and aid workers in what is an ongoing genocide. According to the World Central Kitchen, the aid convoy fully coordinated its movements with the IDF. This, combined with the fact that WCK is closely linked to British and U.S. intelligence, raises more questions than it answers.
The Times of Israel has a pro-Israel narrative. "Israel is extremely sorry for this incident. It came at night and in the fog of war. There was a case of misidentification that led to the airstrikes. Nonetheless, this shouldn't have happened. Israel is at war with Hamas, not the Palestinians in Gaza or the civilians distributing aid."
The nerds are going to wrap up this spin. They think that there's a 1% chance that the U.S. will militarily intervene in the Israel-Gaza war before July of 2024. And that's according to the Metaculous Prediction Community.
Trump countersues Truth Social's co-founders. Here are the facts as agreed upon by Associated Press, ABC News, The Independent, and CNBC. Former President Donald Trump is suing Andy Litinsky and Wes Moss, two co-founders of Trump Media and Technology Group, the publicly traded parent company of the social media platform Truth Social, over accusations the duo hindered the company's ability to go public sooner. In a filing in a Florida court from March 24th, Trump Media alleges Moss and Litinsky, who were once contestants on Trump's reality show The Apprentice, failed spectacularly while leading the company and caused significant damage to it by making poor decisions. The suit asks that Moss and Litinsky be forced to forfeit their shares of the company and their power to appoint members to the company's board. Damages are also being sought. Prior to the presumptive Republican presidential nominee's suit, Moss and Litinsky filed a complaint in a Delaware court in February seeking to prevent Trump from reducing their combined 8.6% stake in the company, a stake agreed upon by Trump and their company, United Atlantic Ventures, in 2021. Last week, Trump Media began publicly trading under the ticker DJT. Stocks increased by as much as 50% after the NASDAQ debut, but Monday the stock took a fall after the company disclosed it had $58.2 million in net loss in 2023. Even after the drop, Moss and Litinsky's share would be worth approximately $601 million.
Thanks, Eric. We're going to start the spins with the anti-Trump narrative provided by MSNBC. History shows that it's a reflex for the former president to sue anyone who works for or with him in any endeavor. So it's no surprise that even after taking Trump Media public and seeing a tremendous increase in his personal wealth, Trump has decided to sue two men who helped him get the company off the ground. This is quintessential Trump behavior.
The pro-Trump narrative comes from New York Post. Trump had little choice but to sue Moss and Litinsky. They were granted a golden opportunity to amass great wealth alongside one of the most recognizable people in the world, and they fumbled it with terrible hirings and decisions that cost the company a great amount of its value. These two riders of Trump's coattails should be held accountable for their failures.
Eric, the nerds think that there's a 50% chance that Trump's net worth will be at least $2.54 billion on December 31st of 2024.
And that's according to the Metaculous Prediction Community.
We're going to move on to the story about Trump's document case where the special counsel has criticized the judge's order. Here are the facts as agreed upon by PBS NewsHour, Voice of America, Daily Caller, Forbes, and CBS. In a filing Tuesday, Special Counsel Jack Smith's team criticized a request from the judge presiding over the case involving President Trump's alleged retention of classified documents after his presidency. Smith's team wrote that U.S. District Judge Eileen Cannon relied on a, quote, fundamentally flawed legal premise when she asked the prosecution and defense to propose jury instructions on the scenarios in which Trump could be protected under the Presidential Records Act, or the PRA. Cannon's request could signal that she's receptive to the premise that Trump was permitted to retain classified documents. Smith wrote that he would appeal any decision that doesn't reject the premise. Smith also wrote that Trump didn't designate the classified documents as personal while in office, meaning that the 1978 law doesn't apply in this case. Cannon has yet to rule on Trump's motions to dismiss the case, and a trial date hasn't been set, though it was originally scheduled for late May. Trump has pleaded not guilty to 40 charges of retaining classified documents.
Thank you, Adam. The first spin is an anti-Trump narrative coming from MSNBC. With this filing, Smith dismantled any notion Trump could be protected by the PRA, and he's schooling Cannon on how to apply the law in this case. The PRA doesn't apply to a president who is out of office for more than a year, and Smith knows this is just Trump's way of stalling. If Cannon doesn't adhere to established legal principles, Smith will have no choice but to appeal.
I've got a pro-Trump narrative here, and it's provided by PJ Media. Smith is obviously growing frustrated because his case is falling apart, so he's taking out his anger on Cannon. In his haste to prosecute Trump, Smith can't handle the fact that the judge wants to make sure the jury is provided everything it needs to reach a proper decision. Smith may want to get this case to trial before the November election, but Cannon knows there are steps that need to be taken to ensure proper justice.
The nerds from Metaculous say there's a 50% chance that Trump's classified documents trial will begin by June of 2025.
We need more trials. I think that's what we need right now.
Or we need more tribulations. There's not enough tribulations in there.
There's not a good balance of trials and tribulations. I agree with you.
J.K. Rowling won't face criminal action under Scotland's new hate crime law. Here are the facts as agreed upon by Independent, Fox News, Euronews, New York Post, and BBC News. Police Scotland has responded to Harry Potter author J.K. Rowling's criticism of Scotland's new hate crime law. It said that while they have received complaints in relation to her social media post, they were not assessed to be criminal. The social media post in question, posted on X, formerly Twitter, began with Rowling listing several trans-identified biological men, including some convicted of child rape and possession of illicit images of children. She then set her sights on Scotland's Hate Crime and Public Order Act of 2021, which criminalizes stirring up hatred due to age, disability, religion, sexual orientation, or gender identity. She wrote, "I'm currently out of the country, but if what I've written here qualifies as an offense under the terms of the new act, I look forward to being arrested when I return to the birthplace of the Scottish Enlightenment." Responding to police statement, Rowling posted on X that she hopes every woman in Scotland who wishes to speak on the matter will be treated equally under the law, no matter their profile or financial means. Under the law, which carries a maximum sentence of 7 years in prison, a person can be charged with a crime if they say or do something that a reasonable person would consider to be threatening or abusive.
Eric, we're going to start the spins with the right narrative this time, and it's provided by New York Post. This bill is obviously created to punish working-class people with less power than Rowling. So while Rowling may be safe from veritable thought police, that doesn't mean regular people will be able to call a man and a woman. This law protects the delusional at the expense of free thinking, and its vague nature seems to be written so that, sooner or later, both women and men could face charges.
The left narrative comes from Independent. Nothing in this bill states that what Rawlings said, or even misgendering more generally, would be a crime. Not only will the police face a high bar when it comes to who violates the law, but the law itself also protects free speech surrounding these exact topics. Just because hateful rhetoric is reported and investigated doesn't mean that the police will actually handcuff people for speaking their minds.
Eric, the nerds think that there's a 5.7% chance that Scotland will leave the United Kingdom before 2030.
And that's according to the Metaculous Prediction Community.
Tesla production has decreased in the first quarter of 2024. Here are the facts as agreed upon by BBC News, Daily Mail, Yahoo News, Bloomberg, CNBC, and World News. Elon Musk-owned Tesla saw an 8% year-over-year decrease in electric vehicle production, with just 387,000 vehicles handed over in the first quarter, as the company dealt with a European plant fire and global shipping disruptions. Analysts have expected around 455,000 vehicles for the first quarter, but those expectations were lowered in recent weeks. This was the first reported decline in deliveries since 2020, when the COVID pandemic disrupted operations. Following the announcement, Tesla shares dropped almost 4%. Previously, Tesla's stock price had dropped over the past year because of higher interest rates and competition from other companies producing cheaper EVs. Since January, Tesla's shares have fallen 33%. It was the weakest performer on the NASDAQ 100 index performance and the second worst on the S&P 500. This comes as weak sales in China have prompted Tesla to reduce Model 3 and Model Y production at its Shanghai plant because of stiffer competition. Tesla implemented price reductions at the same time Chinese automakers have done the same.
Thanks, Adam, for the facts. The first spin is narrative A coming from Bloomberg. This news is nothing to panic about. Tesla has sold more vehicles in the first quarter than its biggest competitor, Chinese carmaker BYD, regaining its position as the world's leading seller of EVs. Musk has a strategy and is likely to continue to outperform all other EV manufacturers.
Narrative B is brought to us by Fortune. Tesla is facing multiple problems, including increased competition. The root cause of Tesla's problems could be Elon Musk, as many observers believe the company would be better off if he stepped down as chief executive officer and focused solely on innovation. Musk's controversial social media posts and his association with right-wing politics may be negatively affecting sales.
And the nerds from Metaculous say there's a 10% chance that Tesla will become the largest car company in the world by sales before January 1st, 2035.
You get your Tesla yet?
I'm not going to drive Tesla. I got my Marconi yesterday, but I don't think I'm going to do Tesla.
That Marconi, that just works over off the electrical energy in the air, right? That's how that one works?
It is powered by the mechanics of a Tesla, and Marconi gets all the credit for it. Botswana threatens to ship 20,000 elephants to Germany. Here are the facts as agreed upon by BBC News, Euractiv, Guardian, Politico, Malay Mail, and New York Post. Botswana President Mokgweetsi Masisi on Tuesday threatened to send 20,000 elephants to Germany amid a political row between the countries over restrictions on the importation of hunting trophies. Masisi told German media that Germans should, quote, live together with the animals in the way that you're trying to tell us to, adding that Botswana would like to offer such a gift to Germany. The German Environment Ministry recently addressed the possibility of tighter import limits on hunting trophies over poaching concerns, adding that talks with Botswana and other African countries affected by import restrictions continued. The African leader argued that banning trophy imports would exacerbate poverty while the country faces an elephant overpopulation. He also claimed that Botswana does more than any other country in the world for wildlife protection. Home to 130,000 elephants, Botswana banned trophy hunting in 2014, but lifted restrictions in 2019. To manage the population, the country reportedly offered 8,000 elephants to Angola and 500 to Mozambique. According to a 2021 report by the Humane Society International, Germany is the European Union's largest importer of African elephant trophies and hunting trophies in general. France, Belgium, and Australia banned the hunting trophy trade.
Thanks for the facts, Eric. The spin's going to start with a narrative A provided by Politico. This is an outlandish threat that shouldn't deter Germany from banning the import of hunting trophies. The unethical organizers of these hunting trips are the only ones who benefit from these activities, not the poor local residents or even the hunting authorities. Botswana shouldn't do anything to jeopardize its conservation achievements and should instead work with Germany on ways to protect its biodiversity.
Narrative B comes from Metro. His offer may sound bizarre, but it has a serious background, so Masisi's intentions are admirable. An ill-considered import ban would penalize countries like Botswana and undermine their immense wildlife conservation efforts. The so-called developed countries should first worry about their own fauna, abandon their neo-colonial attitude, and take local concerns seriously.
Well, Eric, the nerds think that there's a 53% chance that space-based technologies will facilitate the creation of an effective global system for tracking and mitigating illegal wildlife trade before the year 2030.
And that's according to the Metaculous Prediction Community.
Okay.
Our final story today comes out of Tennessee. They're passing a bill that's banning geoengineering. Here are the facts as agreed upon by the Tennessee General Assembly, WKRN, WION, BBC News, and NBC. Tennessee's General Assembly on Monday passed Bill SB 2691, which prohibits the intentional injection, release, or dispersion of chemicals or similar substances into the atmosphere, with the express purpose of affecting temperature, weather, or the intensity of the sunlight. The bill was sponsored by State Representative Monty Fritz and State Senator Steve Sutherland, both Republicans, who say there was, quote, widespread documentation of geoengineering, practices that use chemical compounds to manage climate change and, quote, solar impact. Geoengineering is a largely theoretical concept that includes wide-ranging proposals aimed at counteracting climate change. Hypothetical examples include reflecting sunlight back into space to lower the temperature and cloud seeding. Tennessee lawmakers focused on the issue last year after the federal government released a report on solo geoengineering, reflecting sunlight into space. The White House said there were no plans to, quote, establish a comprehensive research program focused on solar radiation modification. Governor Bill Lee is ready to sign the bill into law, so it will take effect July 1st. Other states, including Pennsylvania, Rhode Island, Kentucky, and Minnesota, have also introduced similar legislation. The bill makes no reference to chemtrails or any similar theory, despite critics claiming it relates to the theory that airplanes are spraying government-made chemicals into the sky instead of condensation trails.
Adam, thank you for the facts of that story. Our first spin is a Democratic narrative coming from IFL Science. Republicans have gone off the rails. This is a case of them spreading debunked conspiracy theories and passing a law to ban something that's non-existent. The conspiracy theories aside, this bill focuses on geoengineering, which is an undefined collection of hypothetical practices that have never been tested. This is a waste of time and resources.
Well, the Tennessee conservative is going to speak up for the Republicans, and here's their narrative. Democrats and their media allies want to smear Republicans over this bill, but there's no mention of chemtrails, and it in fact deals with geoengineering, a practice the government released a report about last year. Some media pundits are changing their tune about geoengineering, and Republicans will continue to fight the lies and protect their constituents.
Our final nerd narrative of today's podcast says there's a 3% chance that a geoengineering act of Congress will become U.S. federal law by the end of 2024. Yes, sir. I'm excited. That's going to be fun. Cannot wait for that. I'm on pins and needles already.
I've been watching C-SPAN 24 hours a day waiting for him to do that.
C-SPAN? You still get C-SPAN?
Yeah,
man, I want that. Do you subscribe to it?
No, I have got one of those giant satellite discs from the 80s in my backyard.
Oh, yeah, from the discs. Yeah.
I've got like three different receiver boxes that I have to switch like every 3 hours as the satellite moves. And
what a pain.
Has to switch off to a different satellite.
It is, but look what you get from it.
I get Hi-Li out of Nepal.
Yes. Thanks for listening to the Verity Podcast for Thursday, April 4th, 2024.
Each day we use machine learning to read about 5,000 articles from about 100 newspapers and figure out which ones are about the same stories. For each major story, our editorial team then extracts both the key facts that all the articles agree on and the key narratives where the articles differ.
Download the Verity app on the Apple App Store or Google Play, or find out more at verity.news. For Adam Clark, I'm Eric Steiner, inviting you to join us next time on the Verity Podcast.